Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I am your host, Joseph Ford, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., that's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C, and PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can click on all the different tabs, the one that says the code. If you hover your mouse over it, it has a drop-down box that says calendars. There's an about page where it's contact, PAX family, PAX frequently asked questions. You can learn more about being a member or a donor. You can get involved in the spending, the situation assistance surveys, Learning Center, and more. Just visit PACTSINC.org. Also visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can keep up with everything that we got going on over here with the Freedom Train. Of course, you know our weekly lineup. I ain't going to go through the weekly lineup today, but make sure you visit the website www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can stay focused and abreast and up to date on everything that we got going on with the Freedom Train. And of course, you know, you can follow us on social media, Twitter at Freedom Train Net, Instagram Freedom Train Network, on our Freedom Train Network YouTube channel, Freedom Train Network, on Facebook, of course, you know, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We out here, so do what you got to do to stay in touch with the Freedom Train Network, because we're putting it down, and we are the premier source of media for black America. You know, the Freedom Train Radio, designed to free your mind. That's how we get down. Pat.
What up?
What it look like?
Two gay swans getting kicked out of their habitat because they bit one of the trainers for trying to remove a styrofoam cup out of their nest that they had adopted as their egg. That's what it looks like.
Was it two males or two females?
It was two males.
Okay. Well, you know, they got a right to protect their own. So, man, I ain't mad at it. Go down, though. Man, what you got into this weekend? This past weekend, what you got into?
Nothing. Got some pictures taken. Went for a couple walks.
Okay.
Got some.
Y'all went to Sears and got some pictures taken at Sears.
Nah. Some black dude met us at at some lake park type place here in Charlotte, and he just, you know, we walked up and down, me and my wife walked up and down and took pictures. So
that's what's up, you know. Make it last forever. That's the y'all.
I got the throat to hit that high note right now.
Hey man, it's all good, bro. You know, some of us got these vocal gifts, some of us don't. It's the same backup for Prince.
What's the show today on, man? You tripping.
Hey dog. I'm helping to help make sure we develop our relationship as two black men in America. And you trying to thwart
that
process.
You
know what I'm talking about? But shoot.
You and ITY, that spells.
That's for unity. Yeah, but nah, today we're going to talk about a couple of different things. We got three topics on the table. First, we're going to dive deep into why white people call the police on black people. Why white people keep calling police on black people. That. Get into economics and you and I having a conversation, and you're going to lead the economics conversation about ideas and thoughts of the upcoming recession and what we need to do to prepare ourselves, as well as the 4th of July, the 4th of July weekend, and, you know, what that means to us as black people, and just how do we spend the 4th of July as black people in America, knowing that we wasn't free when the actual 4th of July actually happened and all those things. So we're going to dive into them topics. and make it happen. You know what I'm talking about? Is you ready?
I think so.
You sure? You got your digger's hat on with the light on the front, like a miner, coal miner.
Nah, because coal miners support Donald J. Trump.
Oh.
So well,
I had to
take my hat out back and bury
fuck
it.
Donald Trump. Hey, that song was hard though. Fuck Donald Trump. That beat was live.
The beat was live.
I like white folk, but I don't like you. Everybody in the hood wants to fight you. That's a funny opening line. Donald Trump probably listened to that song, Crip Walking Across His House. Fuck me. Fuck me.
But he had to put out a disclaimer, I like white people.
Yeah, I like white folk, but I don't like you. Like, you didn't have to say that. But.
Right. You get it, I think.
Hey, man, go down, though. So, man, let's talk about these white folk calling the police on us black folk, man. Let's dive deep into this one, man. Let's put on some scuba gear, man, and get deep up in this one.
Word is born. Who killed you? Down. That was our transition.
All right. Who that? DJ Khaled?
I don't know. It's DJ somebody.
There it is. Shout out to DJ Switch, though.
Yeah. Hey, you saw that? Yeah, she was getting it.
I know. Like, little DJ Switch. I forgot what country she in and all that.
It was in Nigeria, wasn't it?
I don't know. But shout out to DJ Switch, though. That's all I know.
Yeah, she's going to be a gynecologist when her grow up.
And also a world-renowned musician. So.
Hey, is Spinning Records, is that, are you a musician?
She made a song.
Oh, that's right. She did say she played a bunch of instruments.
Yeah, she made a song. So her and her mom made a song.
That was her mom in the video?
Yeah, singing.
Oh.
Yeah, so DJ, hey man, she got skills, man.
She got a hip hop face too. Every time she said her name, face got all twisted up. She was all hard with it. DJ Switch.
Suckers. She wanted to cuss, but she ain't old enough. So.
She's like, yeah. DJ Switch, fool.
Already. Like spaghetti and confetti.
Change the name to DJ Switchblade. Start cutting people.
I guess.
All right, what we got? The white folk.
The white folk calling the police on black folk. What
the hell? I like white folk, but I don't like you. I'm sorry.
Everybody in the hood. But so now I made a video on my own Social Giants YouTube channel. Go check it out. YouTube.com/OnTheShoulders1 Well, I kind of went into it, but I think we can dive deep into it, because on my video I was talking about how, you know, basically my thing is white folk calling the police on black folk because they want us killed. And when we don't do what they tell them to do, they get mad and they want to put us in our place. And they call all the people who can put us in our place is the police.
Mm-hmm.
What you think?
I mean, I think, you know, like Professor Carl Tone Jones talked about this on his show Office Hours this past week. Get the app, check out Freedom Train website. You'll find it. I think it ain't nothing new, man. I mean, white folk calling the cops on black folk to teach black folk a lesson has been going on since the cops were created. I mean, you know, some people could very, very rightfully argue that, you know, that's one of the purposes of the police. That's like one of the purposes of them being created, was to call them whenever black folk got out of line.
Right. Yeah, especially, like, you know, the genesis of it was to put the slaves back on the plantation.
So, And it's something that's been going on. Like, it's something that never stopped. You know, like, we know about the national cases, but, you know, there are a lot of local cases going on that aren't getting national spotlight. Here in Charlotte, there's a young man who was out with his friends at Steak and Shake. And right after they finished paying for their food, the manager called the cops on them, saying that they didn't pay for their food, even though they had a receipt. So, you know, it's three black boys in the group. So, you know, we're all talking about, like, the permit patties, who permit patty said that she wasn't really calling the cops. She was just joking, which makes it worse if you think about it.
But even in her case, like, you had Permit Patty,
right?
Then you had a story about the other day about the little boy and his friends who go around cutting grass, and the people called the police on him. He was like 12. So, you know, they're killing on one end, police interaction, all these other things we have. White folk are killing kids, calling the cops on kids. They see us from young to old as a threat, and we need to wake the hell up to that. That's what I'm at with.
Yeah, I mean. And then, again, like, because we keep getting caught up in this thing about racism's coming back and, like, this is new and they've never done this and blah, blah, blah. Like this is where I get frustrated, because it's like, if you look at their history, it's always been there. They've been doing this. Like, even you don't even have to look at the history. Go back and look at comedy sketches from black comedians from the 90s and the 80s, you'll find a lot of them talking about white folks calling the cops on black folks for no reasons, and black folk, you know, the cops showing up and fucking black people up. Like, that was a regular comedy trope among black comedians. So, again, it's like, I just don't understand. I mean, the ignorance is just astounding to me. That's just where I'm at with it. Like, and then not just the ignorance of the masses, because you don't really expect every single person to be up to date on what's going on historically, socially, culturally. I mean, I know it'd be nice if they would, but you just don't. But when I see, like, activists and advocates and all of these people that are supposed to be helping things get better being surprised by this, it's kind of like, you know, like, what the fuck?
Well, I'm with you on that, man. That gets me. It's like, how are you an activist and an advocate and this person out in the forefront doing all this screaming and yelling and all these things, and people are looking at you as a leader, but you're also like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. Why are white people doing this? Then you still going on CNN arguing with people about stuff that everybody already know what the hell happened and why it happened. Like, where are you in this process? Why are you so far in the infant stage in this process as an activist? Like, who gave you your platform?
Right. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm like, I mean, we see it. We know that it's been going on. We know that it ain't nothing new. We know this. But at the same time, it's like, how are these people who were supposed to be our spokespeople, our advocates, surprised by this? That means they're lacking in their history. I just don't. And then, like you said, to get on national TV and to try to go toe-to-toe with people who are doing this, you know, and people who are supporting doing this, it's crazy to me. And I'm kind of beyond that stage where I'm going to be mad at white people for being white. Like, I'm just kind of, I'm past that. Like, now I'm just, every time a conversation comes up, I'm like, all right, black folk, you know, what are we going to do about it? And why the fuck, well, first off, why the fuck are we surprised by it? After we get through that, what are we going to do about it? Because
to me, we still surprised because we still choose to remain ignorant, because we choose to think that our personal bubble is the only thing we need to worry about when everything around us is falling apart. And it's like, we choose to be ignorant, then we pass the ignorance down to the next generations, and then it's only a few of us who's in the know, but still, I said, it's think about how many people who were supposed to be conscious who really put their kids on what's going on.
Right.
You know,
and that's real right there, what you just said. That's real.
But think about it. They'll sit there and scream in your face on social media, all these different places all day, complain all day about what's going on. But your kids have no idea. You haven't taught them about this real world. Like I keep saying it. Now, a lot of people might think my folks was like ghetto and hood or whatever, and they wasn't. And I know I might talk about it as if it's such, but they wasn't. But like when I tell you in my household, when I say the word white wasn't used, I mean the word white wasn't used. It was cracker. But what my parents, especially my daddy, what my parents was doing, letting us know from the jump that this is the America we live in. White folk do not like you. You need, and the quicker you understand that white supremacy is real, and they will chop your grandmother up to get to you. Try to understand, like that scene in Rosewood when Esther Rolle played the mother figure, and they shot her, and they shot the old men. They kept killing all these old people, and these people don't care about us like that. And we need to understand that's why they calling the police on us. And what we need to do. And stay our asses around black folks. Go around them when need be. And when we go around them, make sure we're ready for any and everything.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at right there. Like, I'm not Peppermint Patty Barbie or Permit Patty Barbecue Becky and all these other cute names that we give these white folks that do shit to kill us.
Do nothing.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and we're in this age now where motherfuckers thinking that they are real activists because they make a Facebook post. I mean, we just, like, when do we get to the point where we actually do something? And I'm not talking about running out and killing white folk. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm saying, when do we do things as a community to make ourselves safer, to take our future into our own hands, to take control of our own communities? Like, when do we begin to just, like, start focusing on fixing us, developing us, growing, you know what I'm saying? Growing. When do we start doing that instead of reacting to everything that they do to us? You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you, though, because we have to realize that you can't combat racism with cracking jokes.
No.
And once we realize that, like, the thing now is if a white person gets caught doing something racist on camera, then you make them famous. Like, but haven't we learned from the killings? Like, if white America really wanted to, they'd just raise the money for those white people to get them back on their feet, just like they did for George Zimmerman and everybody else. They just raised the money for them.
And
so,
that's,
I mean, you could get them fired. You can get them fired from their job, but that doesn't end the racism. That just makes them even more enraged. That just stirs up the racism. I'm not saying don't get them fired either. But what I am saying is, if you believe that that's a solution, no, that's just one act that people can do, but that's not a solution to ending racism. That's not going to stop white people from calling the police on us. Now, is it fun and is it funny? Hell yeah. But still, that's not a real rebuttal.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. And look, we don't do anything to really, because what you said there was interesting and true. In a lot of these cases, especially with regards to police officers, when they do messed up stuff, people create fundraisers, and these people end up becoming millionaires. And then even if they do get fired, they get a job in another precinct not too far away. George Zimmerman's case, they raised millions of dollars for him. You know what I'm saying? And in the case of all those police officers, they raise money for them as well. So, you know, it's making these people famous and shaming them. And that's where we get into our narrow worldview of what's going on. Just because a bunch of black people are, quote unquote, blasting these people, you know, and we feel good because all of our friends are all like, fuck this and fuck that. There's a whole other side of the coin, and they're willing to spend money supporting each other. And we don't know whether or not, we do know that Permit Patty in particular had to step you know, had to step down the CEO of her company. But we also don't know, you know, like what type of donations she might have gotten or might have been raised for her to support her and her family. You just don't know what type of support she got. In my opinion, you can't fight racism by making it an individual battle with every individual that chooses to do something and catching it on. I'm not saying people shouldn't be publicly shamed because that's a part of creating the culture. I'm saying if that's all we're doing, then we ain't serious.
Well, I mean, think about it. Look at it like this. Those white people who will lose their jobs or get fired, lose businesses and things, they had no real power in the first place. Donald Trump has been fucking up left and right, and you can't do nothing to stop him. Real white power, real white supremacy. So these real white people, like the little small stuff get taken care of. They are always casualties of war. But if you really think that that's going to end racism, that's going to end those people calling the police on us, that's not. It hasn't slowed anybody down. Like for the most part, a lot of those people are just shamed for the most part. It's not like across the board people are losing their jobs and losing their livelihoods across the board. That's not happening across the board. So most of the people are just being shamed. So while it's fun and it's funny, and I'm not saying don't do it, but if that's the only action we're going to take, like you said, we ain't serious.
But everything is so fucking superficial, man. Everything is so surface level. We get excited and emotionally amped up about superficial shit, and there's no deeper level activity followed behind it. And it's the same thing with not on the positive and the negative. You know, and I know I sound bitter and shit right now to a lot of people listening, but we got to do something more substantial, something with more meaning to it if we want things to really change. If we keep doing what we're doing now with all of this internet warrior foolery and all of this other stuff, and everything's got to be a party, everything's got to be fun, everything's got to be a game. If we keep doing that stuff, things are not going to get better. They're not going to change. And you got to think, I think about it another way too. Because we're not doing anything to take power away from people like Permit Patty, well, all we're doing is hurting them as individuals, but not the structural or the systemic issues that we face. Permit Patty has children who are now going to grow up utterly infuriated and completely racist because of what they have experienced and because of the narrative that their mom is going to pour into them. But they're still white, so they still have white privilege. And guess what's going to happen? Guess what could potentially happen to these white kids who have white privilege and have a real deep-seated hate for black people that is now connected deeper than just some ancestral, you know, like, divine God ordinance type level, but on some real live y'all fucked up my childhood and my livelihood type shit. You know, you're creating a potential Dylann Roof situation. And again, I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen, but what I'm saying is if that's all you're doing, you're creating more problems for our kids down the line. You're creating bigger issues. And you can say that sounds cowardice all you want, but I'm just being real. If we're not going to do anything real, anything substantial, anything substantive, anything with real meaning behind it, then we'd be better off just not doing nothing at all. Because all you're going to do is poke the bear, but you're not willing to fight the fucking bear when it wake up, you might as well just fucking...
Well, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with it is, you know, like you said, we can't just crack jokes and, oh, they got fired and just going on to the next thing, to the next day. Like, hey, we won. Like, nah, not necessarily. Got to be ready for any and everything. But once again, that goes to those who are not studied about white supremacy and how it works and why it works and all those things there. So when you're not studied in that, you're going to just do the preliminary things. And the preliminary things get you fucked up in the long run. Because like you say, We think about it. We know damn well we're kicking the hornet's nest when we do these things. So be prepared for the hornets to sting. But that don't mean that the hornet's nest can't be destroyed. That don't mean that hornets can't be stepped on. But just understand that you're kicking the hornet's nest. Same thing we told Jamel Hill at ESPN.
Right.
We ain't saying don't say what you're just saying. Just understand that you're kicking the hornet's nest.
There will be repercussions.
So don't be afraid of white people or white supremacy or their reactions. Just be ready for them.
Well, you already afraid if all you're going to do is crack jokes on the internet. Look, you're afraid. If you're not willing to go out and do something real to make a real difference, if you're not willing to teach your children the truth, to have difficult conversations about what's going on in the world, to prepare the next generation or prepare yourself for what's going on in the world, you're afraid. And, Joe, we know this. We got people out here who won't even talk to their kids about having sex. You honestly think they having real race-based conversations with their children? Hell no.
Well,
we are afraid, and that's part of the problem.
The only race, consistent race conversation I hear black people having with their kids is the one we have to have with the police and, you know,
and
basically
we don't
even
teaching
have
that
kids.
One right.
Well, right. That's what I'm getting into is teaching their kids to be afraid of the police, which is straight bullshit. Like, being afraid of the police has not kept us alive all these years. Why the hell are you going to continue to do it? Nobody's telling you to make your damn kids into no damn warriors, but you can't teach them to be afraid of the police is useless, in my opinion. Like, because you can be as nice as you want to. We see it all the time. You can be as nice as you want to. If they want to fuck you up, they're going to fuck you up. So stop with all this. When they come out, you say, yes, sir, no, sir. You ain't got to say no damn yes, sir, no, sir, no. If that cop feel like having a bad day, what you going to do then? You can yes, sir, no, sir, all you want to. All they got to do is feel like having a bad day, and that's your ass. So just be prepared. Understand the world you live in and be prepared for any and everything when you're dealing with white people and white supremacy, agents of white supremacy.
Already.
So let's move on. Let's talk about these economics. Pat,
pick-a-bow!
You know,
that's our transition. Sitting.
Hey, man. Boop, 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 boop. There you go. So, economics, recession, stocks crashing, stock market crash and all these other bullshit. Black community, it's coming up. What you got?
Well, I brought this up, and this is because I like talking numbers. I like talking economics. And for those of you that don't know, this past Thursday on my show, Lessons from the Screen, forgot the name of my damn show for a minute. I did a show on the CBO's, the Congressional Budget Office report, long-term report, basically examining the United States, our debt, blah, blah, blah. Basically, we broke. Nothing new there. I will say this, and the only reason I bring this up is because I'm going to say this. It bothers me because it affects the way we strategize and plan. A lot of black people really seem to think that China owns most of the U.S. debt. And I really want to put that to bed because it irks me. They don't. The American people own most of the United States debt. And Japan owns a larger share of the debt than China does. Now, this impacts us because you have a lot of us looking economically to ways we can get involved with the future of the world by thinking about ways we can invest in the Chinese government, because we're assuming that China is at some point going to overtake America and just own all of America, which is false on a bunch of levels. But rather than get into a whole discussion on that, I just want to say China does not own the bulk of the U.S. debt. And if the United States economy collapsed, China's economy would collapse as well. So I want to throw that out there. I know that ain't here nor there, but so I told Joe that we needed to talk about what I feel is an incoming recession. I don't know if it's a depression or not. I'm not saying the economy is going to collapse, but what I am saying is that right now I think we're in the middle of a bubble, and I think that bubble is going to pop soon. Now, the reason I say this is because Well, there are a few things, and I'm going to try to narrow them down so that we're not all day talking about minutiae and figures and things that we got to spend the other half of the conversation explaining. But basically, if you look at the margin debt ratio right now in America, and the margin debt is basically when people borrow money to buy stocks, they're buying on the margin, and that's called margin purchases. So right now, the margin debt in America is at a rate that is twice what it was in 2008, before the crash of 2008. It's also higher than it was before the crash in the 80s and the 90s. So the 80s, I meant to say. So we're looking at a situation where the margin debt is high. We're looking at a situation where the debt to income ratio right now on the stock market on New York Stock Exchange is inverted, and every time that's been inverted over the last 70 years, we've had a recession here in this country. And we're also looking at the fact that we have a Republican president, and every Republican president we've had for the last 40 or 50 years at least has presided over some sort of a recession. So you mix all those things together. You also mix it in with the fact that roughly every 10, 15 years we have a recession in America, and the last recession was back in 2008. So it doesn't seem like it's been that long for those of us that have been through it.
It's about time for another one, though, to be honest. It's about time.
Yeah, we're due. And all of the indicators are showing that we're due. The debt is out of control. The stock market itself is no longer pricing stocks based on real value. It's pricing stocks based on speculative value. And in my opinion, anytime you get into, and again, it's just my opinion, I'm not an economist, but in my opinion, anytime you get into valuing companies based on speculative value versus real value, you're talking about a bubble. And that's how come you were able to see Bitcoins rise and fall the way they were, because they weren't being valued based on their real value. Their value is based on speculation. And speculation is always just somebody's perception of what's going on. So you just add all those things together, and in my opinion, it looks like we're due for a recession. Now, typically the way economics work, the larger the rise, the harder the fall. And we've been on an amazing ride the last 10 years. Stock market has been breaking records on a regular and consistent basis over the last few years. So has the debt. But we've just been on this tremendous rise where the stock market has been breaking records and eclipsing point values that at one point people were saying were impossible to break. And it's just smashing through walls and continuing to rise. So I'm looking at it, and I'm like, well, if the idiom is true, the larger the rise, the harder the fall, we're in for a hell of a tumble. And again, this is going to be a recession. You're going to hear a lot of people talking about it in terms of the market correcting itself, because that's actually what it's doing. We're in a speculative market right now. At some point, the market is going to adjust itself so that the real values of these companies becomes their actual stock price. And when that happens, if the real value is lower than the speculative value, you're going to have a market correction. Anytime you have a market correction of more than 15 or 20%, they designate it as a recession, a major correction. And I think we're due for one of those. I think it's going to come soon. So that gets back to the question, what do we do about it?
Right, that's what I just about to say. So tell us, in your opinion, shit, what we do for individual and group economics?
I think in terms of group economics, it becomes important for us to, if you're an individual with heavy investments in the stock market, I think one of the things you need to do is decide at what point you're going to start investing more into government securities, government bonds, things of that nature, basically U.S. debt. It becomes a safe haven during a recession. So at some point, you've got to determine when you want to make that adjustment in your portfolio to protect your assets. And if you're going to leave assets in the stock market, leave them in the stock market and ride the wave, because you know, just like it's going down during a recession, it's going to come back up at some point. So if you've already taken a major hit on your stocks, you might as well, like, don't pull out your money and just accept all that loss. Just stay in and wait for it to come back up, because it's going to rebound. Another thing, if you got money to the side, me personally, if I were in a position to invest a lot of money, because, you know, market corrections are also a major transference of wealth. That's when the rich really get richer and the poor really get poorer. This last recession in 2008 proved that, as companies were being bought for pennies on the dollar of their actual wealth. And then when the market restored itself, when it recovered, you started seeing all these wealthy billionaires become mega billionaires, or multimillionaires becoming billionaires. So it's going to be a good time to get in my opinion, at that level. Now, that's just on an individual level. So if you're already invested, I would look at converting your money over into government securities, government debt, things like that, where the interest rate is going to become better in terms of your long-term growth. If you're looking to get in, I would wait for things to smash out. Even if you get in now, in my opinion, you're not going to make that much money. That's just my opinion. I'm not an economist. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of money to be made right now, because the stock market is smashing through barrier after record after record after record. Either wait until it cools or get something that's just a new startup and try to ride that out, but that's risky. So I would say if you're trying to get in, go ahead and start investing in government securities, government bonds. You can get them from treasurydirect.gov. You can bid directly on government bonds, or you can go to a regular stock website where you buy stocks and invest in government indexes like VGIT. That's a government index. So I think there are various ways that you can do that. I'm kind of tripping that I actually remember the name of the index off the top of my head. But anyways, so I know my shit, man. But anyways, so I think you should do that. Now, for us as a group, I think this is going to be important for us to manage collectively, because the stock market crash, the recession, the Great Recession of 2008, wiped out all of our gains that we had made as a people from the 1950s forward. All of our gains were wiped out, because most of our gains were in our housing, and that's where the bubble was. So it's important to understand that right now we are back in a position economically very similar to the one we were in the early 1900s. That being said, we were able to build a lot of impressive shit in the early 1900s. So I think at this point in time, it's going to become imperative for us to begin to invest in each other, invest in our communities, invest in local businesses, and start to develop a culture and local economies that are as close to recession proof as you can make them. That means our dollars circulate in our communities. That means we purchase with each other. That means we buy black as far back as we can reach. And if we get to a point where we can no longer buy black, I'm talking B2B, then we have to become producers and manufacturers, and we support each other on that level. That means that we start investing into our schools directly, private schools, or whatever the case might be. That means we start investing in our businesses, like I said, our doctor's offices, like I said. That means we start producing things, like I said, and that means we really, I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm doing that for a reason. We really have to begin to circulate our dollars through our own economies and do our best to make sure that we look out for each other in the times coming ahead, because recessions are also a great time for economic realignment in America. Every recession is an opportune time for an economic realignment, and black people could really, really, really use, we really need to be positioning ourselves to be on the better side of the next economic realignment, where we're not losing everything, but instead we're gaining substantial things in comparison to what we had before. So I don't want to go too deep or talk too much because I know we got other things we want to talk about. But I feel like this is important, and we need to pay attention to it.
Hell yeah. One quick thing, though. How could people, because I was at this meeting, and they was talking about how life insurance, you could put your money in life insurance, and it could help protect it from recessions and all these other things. How much do you know about that?
That goes into the different uses of life insurance. Now, I'm not sure exactly what they were talking about because there are a bunch of different angles at play with that line of thought. There's a line of thought that wealthy people use life insurance to increase the size of their estate so that they can pass on extra money to their heirs. There's a growing pool of thought. You have life insurance policies that act as a sort of fund where you can pull money out of your life insurance policy. So there are a bunch of different things that play with that. I think unless we own the life insurance companies, I don't really see that as a group tool that we can use. It's an individual tool that you can use individually, but when we're talking about what we can do collectively to create our own local economies that are recession-proof or as recession-proof as possible, I don't know that that's a tool. And without knowing specifically what they're talking about, I don't want to jump in on an angle and then have somebody in one of the comments or something be like, that ain't what we was talking about at all. See, you fucking up and blah, blah. So I just, without knowing exactly what they're talking about, I couldn't give my opinion on it one way or another.
I get you. And I forgot the whole, the totality of the conversation, too. So I ain't helping in that. All right,
no,
so
you good. Because that is an angle that, like, because that goes into the talk about reshaping the way we think about economics. We think about life insurance in a different way. And there is, let me say this, we don't think about it in a different way. There is a different way to think about life insurance. There is a different way to think about insurance, period, where insurance could potentially become an asset to your estate instead of a safety net. And we tend to not think about insurance that way. We tend to think about insurance in terms of, you know, I just want to pay for my funeral or take care of me if I get sick. We tend to not think about it in terms of, I know I only generated $100,000 in my lifetime. I'm just throwing a number out there, people, don't kill me. But through using insurance, I could pass on $30 million to my children. You see what I'm saying?
Right. I got you.
And there are other ways to think about insurance, too, without even taking the conversation into any gray areas, because there's another school of thought where you could take the money that you're giving to an insurance company every day and put it away in a money market account or a mutual fund of some sort and have more direct control and more utility with that money and still be able to take care of yourself, provided something happens. There are a lot of different ways you can play the insurance game. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nah, that's all good. Talk, my brother. Cause
man, you got all quiet on me and shit, so I'm like, nah, man.
I'm
whatever.
Listening.
Go ahead, Joe.
Me and the people listening.
All right, so, ba-ba-boom! 4th of July.
Yep, 4th of July coming up on Wednesday, and to what a slave is the 4th of July, said Frederick Douglass.
Today is the 4th of July.
Yep.
Well, when they hearing this, it'll be 4th of
July. July 4th. So.
Right.
But the thing is, let me ask you, start with you. How do you view the 4th of July? Do you care about it? You don't care about it? And if so, if you do or you don't, why is that? And then why do you think black people should or shouldn't celebrate the 4th of July?
I don't really give a damn much about the 4th of July because black people were still slaves it wasn't our freedom. You know, it wasn't our day or whatever. So I don't really care too much about it. I do recognize that black people fought in all of the wars, including the war that made America America. So I do pay homage to those black folk. And look, I'm not trying to get in none of that silliness about whether or not those black people were coons, because that, to me, that's a silly argument. It is.
Well, I mean, the day and times was a lot different. So, I mean, a lot of black people these days just be talking cash shit because they can, because they're behind their keyboards and stuff. So.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to get into that argument. I pay respect to those people for doing what they did, doing what they felt they had to do. So, and it's easy to look back, you know, 100, 200 years later and be like, you know, that's easy. You know what I'm saying? You weren't there. And who's to say that 200-300 years from now, somebody won't be looking at us, calling us coons and silly and shit. So, whatever. But like I said earlier when we were talking about this, even though I don't particularly care for what the 4th of July is supposed to mean, and even though we all acknowledge that America has not lived up to its creed in terms of black people, we should not be so upset and so bitter that we miss out on the opportunity to enjoy each other and to have real conversations, to teach each other, to talk to each other, and to build with each other. And I will openly admit, that's kind of a new revelation for me. You know, if you had asked me about if we were talking about the 4th of July 2 or 3 years ago, and we were, I wouldn't have said that. But that's kind of where I'm at nowadays. Like, any opportunity you have to get together with your family and enjoy your family, take that opportunity, but also take that opportunity to teach, to build, to have real conversations about what's going on. Take every opportunity you can where you're off work and your kids are out of school to enjoy your family and to pass on knowledge. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I feel about it.
Now, that's real. I think all black people, in the time that we have to get together, one thing we should do is read Frederick Douglass' speech to What a Slave is, the 4th of July, to kind of get a sense of what he was saying and what he meant, and to really understand, our place in this country historically, and how the 4th of July has so little meaning to our existence in this country. Because even though I think, from what I've learned about Juneteenth, I think Texans should spur the Juneteenth everything, you know, the things surrounding Juneteenth, because it was more impactful to them than anything. But black people should know more about Juneteenth and should care more about Juneteenth than the 4th of July. But at the same time, take advantage of it, like you said, take advantage of the time to be together with your family, teach, bond, kinship, all the other things there, build. But the 4th of July is not our holiday. And I'm not going to lie, I do side eye black people who be all into the 4th of July, who be dressing up and family patterns and all these things for the 4th of July. Because I'm like, you can't be complaining about white supremacy and then celebrate its foundation. So, I mean, that's how I look at it. And
no, I'm with you on that.
It's not a holiday. Like, we shouldn't give a damn about the 4th of July. The only thing we should care about the 4th of July is not having to go to work. That's exciting that I don't have to go to work today. Fuck the 4th. You know, that's the actual holiday. Fuck George Washington and all the rest of them. But I ain't got to go to work today. Yay! That's where I'm at with it.
No, I'm with you on that. I am with you on that. I definitely don't think you should be walking around draped in the American flag. I would side-eye you any day of the week if I saw you draped. And that's just me being real. If you're one of them super patriotic black people, that's cool, whatever. But I'm still going to side-eye you, and that's my right to do so. So, you know, if I see you walking around draped in, and I'm a vet, let me say that as well. You know, I'm a veteran. I served in the military. So I got for all y'all to be like, you don't have a right. Yes, I do. I served in the military. I got a right to side eye your ass for being draped in the flag. Because I also know that I experienced more racism in the military than I experienced outside of it. So, but I side eye anybody draped in the flag. I side eye any black person that can be super patriotic to the point of just being blindly, willfully ignorant to what America has done to black people and continues to be due to black people. But like you said, if you want to celebrate, if you feel like you have to celebrate, celebrate the day off. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's kind of where I am. Mother's Day. I know a lot of people like to get together for Mother's Day. I know we all know Mother's Day is some corporate bullshit. We know that. You know, if you need a day out of the year designated to tell your mama you love her, you failed as a child. You failed. You have failed. I said it three times so that I'm positive that you know that I know what I'm saying. You failed. That's four. But a lot of people like to get together for Mother's Day. So take that opportunity, and that's something that, you know, those of us that have this knowledge, that do consider ourselves activists, that do the work and read the books and acquire the information, sometimes we got to get out of our own way and meet people where they are. And if that happens to be at a family get-together for Mother's Day, then that's where that is. But you should take that opportunity to converse with people and let them know, you know, whatever it is that you can get through to them. And you be considered the crazy motherfucker in the family. That's fine. But take those opportunities wherever you can to share whatever you can. That's the only way this works.
But at least Mother's Day is something that we can turn and still use to empower our women.
Right.
At least we can do that. You can't do that with the 4th of July. Like,
true.
It's nothing empowering to anybody black about the 4th of July, even though we had black people fighting in the Independence War. You were still a slave after that war. And even if you were able to buy your freedom, you still treated as if you was a slave.
Right.
So, I mean, let's think about how many, like, laws were enacted, inhumane laws were enacted in the 1800s. So it's I'm not gonna lie, the 4th of black people who celebrate the 4th of July frustrate the hell out of me. I ain't even gonna lie, like, it frustrates me because I'm like, we got such short memories, like, and it's either that or we just don't give a shit about our place in this world. It's like, you can't be content with being on the bottom, and I feel like we've become so content with being on the bottom. We feel like this is where we're supposed to be. It's like, you know, we talk about it all the time, how a good number of black people and then the white people who learn about blackness from them think that the worst of black culture is what should be celebrated. So you're not black if you don't exhibit these unbecoming behaviors of black people. So you have to exhibit these behaviors that are acceptable by low-class white culture, or just white culture, period. So, and it's crazy, but it's like the 4th of July, it's an off day. Look at it as nothing more, nothing less. It's an off day. It's a time for you to get with your black family and celebrate y'all blackness. Love each other. Like red, white, and blue, these nuts in your mouth. That's how I feel about it, man. I mean,
We got to get beyond this idea, though, that, because I really think that's the trick. That's the major trick nowadays, is this motivational self-improvement BS idea that your past doesn't make you. And to some extent, it's true. Your past doesn't dictate your future. It doesn't. But your past very much does dictate who you are in this moment. Your past very much does dictate your circumstances as they are now, be that past decisions that you've made are past situations that you found yourself in. They largely dictate your present. And this idea that you can somehow separate the now from the then, the now, the present from the history, is really interrupting and interfering with our understanding of how our past affects our present, and how slavery and Jim Crow and the black codes and the civil rights and all of the inhumane treatment that we've suffered since continues to affect who we are, the opportunities we have available to us, the access, and even the way we think about the world today. And it's hard to reconcile that, because at the same time, you would tell a person who is fucked up in the head that they need to go see a counselor about their past. You need to go see somebody. You need to get that fixed so that you can move on and let it go. But you'll tell a group of people that they need to just forget about it.
Yep.
The two don't equate.
Why are you hanging on to the past? Forget about it.
Right. And so we've got to get our people, because you know my stance, fuck white people and fuck what they're doing. The vast majority of us don't need, I say we need about 10 to 15% of us actually thinking about what white people are doing. The rest of us need to be focused on us. You know, we need to be focused on black people. So we've got to convince 80 to 85% of black people that your past does matter, both individually and collectively. If a woman was beat on in her past, and then she gets a new boyfriend, you will find it completely understandable if she's uncomfortable and doesn't trust him right away. You'll find it completely understandable if he raised his hand to grab something off of the cabinet or the refrigerator behind her and she flinched. You know, you would be completely understanding of that situation. But as a culture, because we've managed to accept this narrative that we're not our past, we look at each other crazy when we flinch over shit. Why you flinching, man? You a punk. You scared of them white people. This, that, or the third, or the third, or the... You always talking about slavery. You always talking about Jim Crow. You always... Everything is the white man. Everything is the white man. Well, okay. Maybe it's not the white man in this particular incident right now. But it's been the white man 99% of the time in the past, so why am I wrong for accusing the white man?
Well, I mean, but those people are the apologists. Those people need to take their fucking capes off. Sit the fuck down. Because nobody is saying that every single thing wrong with black people has to do with white people. But
some
we are calling
off, and
people.
I don't attack them for it either, but some people
right.
are.
But we're not, stop acting like we're still not continuous victims of systematic racism. Like, just stop. And those people, but really those people who show me that show that they don't read. They don't pay attention to what's going
True.
On around.
True.
So you can try to argue the bullshit if you want to, but real data and research shows different. Like, structural
Right.
real racism still exists. Like, I
Right.
keep telling people, I went to an HIV AIDS training. And one
Wow.
of the breakout sessions broke out the information and data as late as 2016 to show that systematic racism is prevalent in America.
Doom, doom.
Like, so if you're going to sit around and you're going to sit and really argue me based off of what you believe
doom,
and,
doom.
And what and your personal experiences, first of
doom,
all,
doom.
You're a dumbass. If your premise to if your base the base of your argument to help refute structural racism is your own personal experiences, you stupid. I don't know that. That's like me saying I don't know that many women who've been raped, so rape can't happen. I'm smart enough to understand that goddamn rape happens, whether I know people who've been raped or not. Rape happens, and I know shit ain't just based off of my personal experiences. So if you're basing America off of your personal experiences, black people off of your personal experiences, you ain't that smart, and you don't really give a shit about the things that's going on around you, and you ain't really paying attention because it's not that, because these same people will take that argument of something being based solely off of somebody's personal experiences and refute that if it's something that they agree with.
True.
And so, and that's what I don't get about our community. It's like, stop. We have to stop trying to be so politically correct. We have to stop trying to fit in with everybody else. We have to stop just trying to assimilate and be real with ourselves and what's going on around us. Because, like me and you were talking, we can you just continue celebrating the 4th of July all you want. Like, why is our population number still stagnant after all these years? After all these babies we having, our population number still stagnant. But you go ahead and celebrate the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at on the 4th of July, man. Fuck the 4th of July.
I'm right.
Celebrate your time off. Celebrate your family. But fuck the 4th of July.
Well, you're saying the politically incorrect version of what I said.
Oh, of course, I always do that. I think our listeners know that.
Gotcha.
Hey, before we close this thing out, man, I'm interested in have you been keeping up with the what's going on with like Lee Daniels and Damon Dash and then Tyler Perry and Monique?
Not outside of what we've been discussing with the Wine After Nine ladies.
Okay, so we probably up on it. So, you know, Dame Dash had to run up on Lee Daniels by his $2 million, and then Monique secretly recorded a conversation between her and Tyler Perry where Tyler Perry admitted to being a fuckboy. And so a lot of...
Because I didn't hear him admitting to anything in the I read the transcript. I didn't listen to the audio.
Well, yeah, that's what they're saying in the transcript. But now a lot of people are saying that Black America owes Monique an apology for not being on her side with the thing with Netflix. And that's why I was going to say, because I disagree, because her issues with Lee Daniels and Oprah is separate from the issue with Netflix, because our stance still don't change on Netflix. Fuck Netflix. Stop complaining about them treating you wrong. Start your own so we can support your ass.
Well, let me say this. I felt like her releasing that video, that audio that he clearly was not aware he was being taped in, that was some fuck shit. And that is the type of shit that I have me like. I don't want to talk to Monique because I don't like you can't. If I can't trust the conversation I'm having with you, not to be released. Even if I ain't saying nothing crazy, it's just, to me, it's just a point of the fact that we could be having a conversation one day, and then we could be having an issue another day, and now you throwing out, you know what I'm saying, you throwing out shit to throw me under the bus or to impact me or whatever. I don't vibe with that. Like, to me, that whole thing was some fuck shit. So I will say that. To the other point, I didn't hear anything in there where he agreed that he had done any. I didn't read because I didn't hear it. I didn't read anything in there where he was like, yeah, you're right. We fucked you over, blah, blah, blah. It seemed to me like he was just like, hey, I'm sorry you feel this way. I don't want you to feel this way. I'll do whatever I can to help you feel better. Like, that's how I read it. And now I didn't listen to it, so the emotions could have been conveyed differently, but reading the transcript, it came off as if he was just trying to mend the fences with her because it just did. So from my perspective, it actually made me look at Tyler Perry in a more favorable light, because it looked like he was going out of his way to mend fences with somebody that he didn't necessarily do anything wrong to. Fact of the matter is, Monique, you signed the contract or whatever. You got paid $50,000 to do Precious, which was a small budget film. Nobody expected Precious to become what it was. Nobody did. You signed the deal. You got paid. Look, everybody on the set of Friday only got paid $5,000. We know Friday made millions and millions of dollars, but they only got paid $5,000. Ice Cube got bread. You know, but he ain't break off Witherspoon. He ain't break off Chris Tucker. He ain't break, you know, he ain't break off all them other guys. They got what they signed up to get.
Well, see, even without, because I'm going to be real, at this point on that, I don't really give a damn or not to get deep into it, but it just on the level of people owe Monique an apology for the Netflix thing because of what you know about Tyler Perry. Yeah, that's bullshit. Like that has nothing to do with going on Netflix. Going, you know, go off on Netflix. Put them, blast them out. But you can't go on a begging tour and then go on a revenge tour. You know, I just think the revenge, I just think those were useless things if you're not on the back end building your own for yourself and creating your own for yourself, because people are going to support you. Just build it. But for you, for your strategy is to, I'm a beg and I'm a go on this ruin your life tour until somebody pays attention to me. To me, that was very useless.
It was, and it made her look even worse in my opinion, because again, what 2 points we talked about it when it was an issue. Where was Monique when shit was really going down in the black community? The only time we've heard from Monique is on shit concerning Monique. So I'm not vibing with all of that ride behind me shit. As far as the Netflix thing goes, you won an Oscar. It wasn't for being funny. You don't get no props on a stand-up comedy special for winning an Oscar for being a fucked-up black person in a non-funny role. An Oscar or an Academy Award that you got 10 years ago and have not remained relevant since. And by her own admission, it wasn't that she wasn't getting roles. It's because she was turning roles down because they weren't offering her the money she felt like she should get. Well, you know what happens when you turn down a bunch of roles? You stop getting motherfucking roles, and people stop thinking about your ass. To the other point, there are a long whole host of Oscar winners that fade into nothingness right after they win that award. That award does not guarantee any sort of status outside of being remembered as an Oscar winner. That's a designation about your career up to that point, not a designation about your lifetime achievement. So the whole thing is bullshit with Monique, and I'm not trying to blast her personally. I'm just saying what she, no, you know what? Scratch that, because she's going out of her way to blast black people. Fuck Monique. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was a better way to handle this situation all around. The Netflix deal, we can make whatever gripes or groans we want to make about it. Bottom line is, Monique already has a special on Netflix from 2009. How many of y'all have actually watched it? She already has a Netflix special up there. How many people have gone to a Monique show in the last 10 years? How many people even really thought Monique was funny like that? Because I'm going to be honest, most of the people I know and most of the comments I saw on her comedy shit before all of this popped off was people saying that she wasn't really all that funny. People was talking about how her attacking skinny bitches had dried up even before she did Precious. So I don't want to hear all this, let's ride for Monique now.
That's a lot of fake shit on both sides.
Yeah,
but My biggest thing is just fuck Netflix, do your thing, and ride on with that. Because it's like, to me, that's where it should have been. That should have been the bulk of it. All right, y'all, this is what Netflix did. Netflix full of fuckboys and pussy holes. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm building the Monique empire. Y'all ride with me. Shit would have been there.
Right. I could have supported the hell out of that. But let me tell you this. I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm not spending more than $100 to see Monique. I'm not.
Hey, man,
spending more than $50 to see Monique.
Yeah. Nobody should argue that. It is what it is. You feel how you want to feel about it. It is what it is. But I just feel like the main reason me bringing that up, because I didn't feel like the Lee Daniels, Tyler Perry, Oprah Winfrey situation had anything to do with the Netflix situation.
It didn't.
As far as people saying that the black community owes her an apology, because if you was one of those people who was, you know, on Elite Dangerous Tyler Perry stuff and you ain't had no information, man, you just stupid. But of course we know you got a lot of those people, but you know, I just feel like, you know, those were two separate situations. And her focus, like we said on the other show, her focus should have been more so on building her own, saying fuck Netflix and going on, instead of trying to press Netflix into caving into what she wanted. So
nobody owes Monique an apology. If you ask me, Monique owes all of us an apology for getting us all wrapped up in her fuck shit. And that's specifically regarding the Lee Daniels, Tyler Perry situation. Because that whole situation should have been handled differently. It should have been. And that's on both sides. That's really on both sides. But she's the one that brought everybody into that fuck shit. And yeah, it's not like everybody getting involved was making the fuck shit any better for her. Because I think she lost more fans and supporters than she gained. But first off, look, Tyler Perry's part of the Holy Trinity at this point. You're not going to win against Tyler Perry. You're not. Second off, she did interviews. Everybody was saying Lee Daniels and Tyler Perry and Oprah was blackballing her. She did interviews saying she was not being blackballed. She was turning down roles. So that kind of destroys that whole argument. At this point, what is there in it for us to be involved as a group in this whole situation? If they're not blackballing you, and your only issue is that you feel like you should have got more than $50,000 to do Precious, that's between you and them. Why are you getting us wrapped up in that situation when we out here getting killed? Motherfuckers is living, not even making $50,000 in 3 and 4 years. And we supposed to be upset because you only got $50,000 for one movie? And like Monique, like she just lost so much respect for me. And she don't give a damn. I know she don't. And her fans don't give a damn. I know they don't. But it is what it is. This is a bad look for her. And I wish a motherfucker would tell me that I owe Monique an apology. Fuck you and her.
Hey.
You know what I'm saying? Like
you on the roll.
Look, you know what I'm saying? Like, shit upsets me, man, because it's like, why are they so emotionally attached to Monique arguing with other millionaires about their fucking money? What is Monique giving to y'all? What is Monique doing for y'all? At least we could say Tyler Perry employs black people. At least we could say Lee Daniels for all his fuck shit. And Lee Daniels does appear to be a fuckboy. He appears to be.
He is a fuckboy.
So for all his fuck shit, at least there are black people that can say, you know what I'm saying, Lee Daniels made me something. What can we say about Monique outside of she called her husband daddy and she loved to trash black people? Because she does. When have we even heard Monique go that hard against white people? Any white person. I ain't even heard her go that hard against George Zimmerman.
Monique can piss you off.
Yeah, because it's just dumb shit after dumb shit after dumb shit. And it really upsets me because I used to think that for all Monique's mouth, she would tell it like it is and she would stand up for the people. And when Monique vanished, I assumed that she was going to stay vanished. When she came back, fighting in the midst of black folk being abused by white folk and getting murdered and killed, when she comes back onto the scene for the vast majority of us, it's on some beef she got with the most powerful black people in entertainment? Really, Monique? Really? That's the best you could do? Motherfuckers getting thrown out of restaurants for being black? They getting shot, getting stabbed, getting passed over for jobs they ain't eating, and you want to... Like, shut the fuck up. And it's not even Monique's fault. Monique is married to a fuckboy. And that's what happens when you're a weak woman. Yes, I said it. When you're a weak woman and you're married to a fuckboy. That's what happens. Monique and her fuckboy husband is what happens to you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of fuckboys. I'm scrolling and we're about to wrap this up, but I'm scrolling and I see Andrew Gilliam, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gilliam, standing up for immigrants here in South Florida. The first thought come to my mind, well, shit, why you ain't standing up against the gentrification in goddamn Tallahassee, that you, the city that you a mayor of? Black people, stop voting for people just because you're familiar with them. They black and Democrats. The city of Tallahassee has had two black mayors, and the black sides of town are getting worse. I just want to say that. Stop voting for people because they're popular. Andrew Gilliam talked good. He talked well, but he don't do shit. And our city is not better for Andrew Gilliam. Our black communities are not better for Andrew Gilliam. I know a lot of you Tallahassee people are going to hear this. Y'all going to be mad. Then I'm talking about your mayor. You got damn right to talk about your mayor because you ride through the same parts of town that I ride through, and you see the black parts of the city getting worse, and our city is being gentrified, and the white parts of town are getting better. I stand right here on this freedom train and say, we do not support Andrew Gilliam running for governor of the state of Florida because the motherfucker ain't did shit to help our city and our black sides of town right here in Tallahassee, where he's been since he was a freshman in college at FAMU. He hasn't helped to fix shit. And it's not just on him because it's on Mayor John Marsh, too, and all them other motherfuckers, Curtis Richardson, and all the other goddamn politicians in the city, whether you black or white. But damn it, the mayor, you know, your ass, the city manager, everybody. Why are our sides of town getting worse? And nobody can argue with me and tell me that they not. Why are our sides of town? Don't give me that. It's not their job. You bullshitting me if you tell me it ain't their job to fix that shit. And if you don't realize that it's the politician's job to fix that shit, your dumb ass shouldn't be voting. So I just wanted to go off real quick because you had a chance to go off. But I just want to say that because I saw that post. But
yeah, man, I'm going. Look, man, and I just don't understand. You know what I'm saying? Like, Monique has blasted every black person
Monique
that says
important,
her name.
Though, but that's the thing, though. Monique is not, she's a comedian. She's not important, so people shouldn't get that too caught up in her. Like,
but
Monique
they are.
Is the same as a rapper. Like,
and
if,
now she's
if,
a podcast. She has a podcast, and I'm sure she's just trying to pump up her views on her podcast by keeping beef going. I just don't like, you know what? I'm sorry.
But I mean, put
right. She's a comedian, and she ain't even worth all this.
But put it like this, we got to remember though, when Kim Kardashian became important because she put out a sex tape, when that made her important, that's how you knew everything was fucked up. Because not only was white people on that shit, but black people was on that shit too. And look at the things that we place value on. We place value on entertainment and athletics over real life. Like, you see it on social media. Like, these parents who, you'll never see them post their kids' grades, but they post all the athletic things. All their kids know is athletics. That's all they do. All they know is athletics. So, I mean, we got a lot. We got a long ways to go, and we fucked up as a community. And that's why, you know, like politicians like Andrew Gilliam, I hold that shit to the fire. You're not just going to be a mayor in the city getting fucked up, except for the white parts of town. So it's just like we call people out, and then I think that's something we need to do and hold people's feet to the fire, and you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do. If you're not, sit your ass down. So that's where we at today. So any parting shots, my friend, before we wrap this up?
Nah, homie.
You want to say nothing else to Monique?
Power to the people. Nah, because you know what? I see that she ain't even released a new episode of her podcast since March 30th, so maybe right. She has found her quiet place.
Right. Well, it is what it is, man. You know, I'm Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train podcast series right here on the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Hey, man, that's how we get down. We keep it real. Two fingers in the air. Holla at y'all.